Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to call to order the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. So welcome this morning. I recognize we have a quorum. I just wanted to get the minutes approved. Anyone who wants to move?
I'd like to move the minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for moving the minutes. Any changes for the minutes? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone who wants to oppose, please say no. See none. The minutes are adopted for the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. So welcome. I see we have the first bill. For Representative Jay Zhang and House File 954.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Are we making a motion on this bill, or?
We're laying it over. So we're making a motion to, because you're a member of this committee, please go ahead and make a motion to lay over House File.
I'd like to move the House File 954 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Yes, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm excited to present House File 954 before the committee today. It's a bill that provides funding to Big Brothers, Big Sisters for workforce readiness, employment, exploration, and skills development for youth. As most of you know, it's one of the oldest and largest mentoring programs in Minnesota, and they have received funding from the Workforce Development Fund for the last 6 years. With that, they conducted 60 college and career readiness events and workshops that served 779 youth over the last biennium. And I think most of us sitting here can think of the caring adult that helped guide our path to success. Yet 1 in 3 young people report they do not have a mentor. This bill will provide more of our kids facing adversity with strong, enduring relationships that help them beat the odds. And I just want to share a little bit with you. I think for myself to be here today, I wouldn't be here without mentors. I'm a kid who grew up in public housing, surrounded by poverty, gang violence, and drugs. And because of mentors who helped me, I'm here today. But for many of the kids that I grew up with, they didn't have that opportunity. And so it brings me so much pride to be carrying this bill and to be here today with leaders from Big Brothers and Big Sister to testify. So here is Mr. Michael Gore, the CEO of Big Brothers and Big Sisters, Twin Cities. Jackie Johnson, Executive Director of Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Central Minnesota. And Big and Little, who have first experience with this program.
Welcome, Mr. Gore. I just wanted to inform this body. I was his former boss when he was on the school board superintendent for Minneapolis Public Schools. So, welcome to the Jobs and Economic Development. And please state your name and proceed.
thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Michael Gore. I'm the CEO of a high-performing, established in 1920, Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Greater Twin Cities. So thank you very much for this opportunity, Chair, members of the committee. As I stated, our organization was established back in 1920. Since 1920, we have served over 500,000 youth in our community. And we are about to celebrate our 100th year birthday next year. So I'll make sure that you all are invited to our 100th year celebration. Our core work. Our core work is all about really igniting our youth in our community potentials. All kids possess potential to be successful in a community. It's a matter of igniting those potentials. And our work involves making sure our kids in our community are connected with caring adults. Our organization in Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Twin Cities represents about 3,300 youth that we serve every year. What's represented today is three different organizations. What three related organizations, but three different geography. We represent Greater Twin Cities. You'll hear from my colleague Jackie. She represents in St. Cloud area, and then we have another affiliate down in Owatonna Faribault area. So collectively, three agencies serve about 16 counties in our state of Minnesota, representing majority of our youth, exceeding over 5,000 kids. In terms of our work in Greater Twin Cities, I think that we are uniquely positioned and to serve our kids, especially kids who are faced, I think, most often with sort of headwind of sort of labeled as at risk. Those are the youth are the kind of core essence of the youth that we serve in our community, where they are challenged either sort of economically. Where that it is currently defined by sort of a standard of K-12 or the definition of those youth who are eligible for free or reduced lunch. But also, along with that sort of challenging circumstances, majority of the kids that we serve in Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Greater Twin Cities is coming from really single-parent household. Not to say it is bad, but it is a challenging circumstances for a lot of our youth. On top of that, over 20% of our youth, one of their family members are incarcerated. So we are sort of serving the sort of core chronically challenging youth. But the good news is that we do our work, what we do, very, very well, and outcomes has been very, very positive. I just want to share sort of a couple of outcomes with you so you can see the sort of nature of our work and what this work entails. If you compare our work in terms of four-year graduation rate, so we serve our kids starting at 8 years old all the way to 21 years old. If you look at our kids that we serve, if you measure their four-year graduation rate, that is current standard graduation rate for any K-12 institutions, which is a cohort to cohort starting in ninth grade all the way to 12, our graduation rate exceeds over 90%. So we're serving kids who are chronically faced with at risk. As we define in terms of economic circumstances or social income standards, or for that matter, often kids of color are obviously a challenge as well. So a group of kids that we serve, over 80% of our kids are kids of color, coming from Minneapolis and St. Paul, but exceeding that in terms of first and second ring suburb, as I stated earlier. And we serve as far east as South Washington County. Then, of course, extreme west all the way into Hopkins, Minnetonka area as well. So you'll hear from my colleague Jackie about her work in St. Cloud, as well as a couple of you will hear from a big and a little in terms of impact of our work. But in terms of our work, it's not just exceeding with stopping the work at the high school graduation, but it's post-graduation that I think we're also keenly aware. Not all kids are going to be successful in four-year institutions. So we encourage our youth that we serve to make sure they have a future plan in place beyond just graduating from high school. Of course, high school graduation is number one. Beyond high school, we want to make sure our kids are prepared for post-secondary option. Hence, your support and this body's support in the past has been crucial, and we're asking for additional support, enabling our kids to have access to college career readiness work that you will hear a lot more from the match that you in shortly. But more importantly, opportunity for our kids to be exposed to what's out there. So we have a chronic access gap or opportunity gap in our kids in our community. I think it's critical that we provide all of our youth, regardless of your income, your gender, your race, or your condition, that you have full exposure of what's possible. So our work, as I said, is all about sort of creating opportunity for a young adult, young people to meet with our caring adult. And our work is conditioned upon having a volunteers. So all of our mentors are not paid mentors. They are volunteers from our community. And they receive training, what does it mean to be a mentor within Big Brothers, Big Sisters organization. And they do a great, great job of mentoring our youth. So our mentors provide this sort of very important critical guardrail for our youth who sometimes lack that support, and sometimes they're lacking that caring adult who can really guide that child for a proper trajectory and direction in terms of work itself. So the work has been very rewarding, as I said, in terms of outcome and the result that we have able to garner, and we're very encouraged in terms of our future growth. As I said, we are serving 3,800 youth, and we're looking to serve a lot more. And then we have a unique opportunity to leverage, really, public resources with the private resources. The resource we get from the state amounts to be around 2% of our total budget. So majority, if not all, of resources that we raise through our individual donors, our sort of a private contribution to our organization. And we think we have a unique opportunity to leverage sort of public-private partnership. We have a strong partnership with an organization called Federated Insurance. And Federated Insurance, which is located in Owatonna, Minnesota, is generously provide us with a scholarship fund and enabling our secondary students not just receive services in terms of college career readiness, but also be able to leverage scholarship post-high school. So we think this sort of opportunity is something we want to take advantage of, and we are asking for your support to serve more kids in our community. As I said, we serve right now around 3,800 youth in our community. In 2018, we still have well over 500 youngsters who are waiting to be matched, meaning that they're looking for mentors. And we would like to serve more kids in our community with more mentors, as well as providing them with a college career readiness work itself. So let me, based on the comments, let me yield the floor to my colleagues. I thank you very much for your time and opportunity this morning to present to you the work of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Greater 10 Cities and work of Big Brothers just statewide. Collectively, we serve well over 5,000 kids, plus close to 3,000 adults who happen to be one-to-one mentors that are engaged with us every day. So our footprint statewide is well over 8,000-9,000 people that we serve every year. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, allowing me to talk a little bit more, indulging me to talk about Big Brothers Big Sisters this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Gore. Will you please bring your other testifiers? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Please state your name and proceed.
Hi. I am Jackie Scholl Johnson. I am the Executive Director of the Central Minnesota Big Brothers Big Sisters Program. So we cover Stearns, Benton, Sherburn, Morrison, and Wright counties. And I have been with the agency almost 9 years. Many of you are hearing about ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences, and we at Big Brothers Big Sisters know that we are a solution to anyone dealing with a high ACE score, because what they say is it takes someone with a PCA, which means predictable, compassionate, and available, to help change those kids' lives. And we do that. We do that well, and we do that every day. Our program served 851 youth last year, 423 littles, and 173 of our bigs were high school bigs, and we are affecting them as well as we are affecting the littles that we serve. And we are very dedicated to turning our children into productive community members. Kids that are with Big Brothers Big Sisters are above and beyond the peers in the same situations. In conversations with our littles, we let them know that it's that they need to be thinking about careers and what they want to do and what interests them, what problems they want to solve, et cetera. We start asking them that when we get them as little as 6 years old and start exposing them to different types of careers. Students get a lot of pressure to go to four-year colleges, and we offer a lot of opportunity for them to learn the trades. We do birdhouse building, we do robotics, we do culinary arts, we do a lot of hands-on activities that go well with our kids. We also expose our kids to military careers. We also receive the Federated Challenge Scholarships, and last year our agency in Central Minnesota gave away 9 youth scholarships at a value of $27,900. And of that, $26,900 went to the trade schools. So you can see what an impact that is, that if you're a little or a high school big in our program, you have access to scholarships. Many of our kids are first-generation college students, first-generation in the country, and their bigs provide additional guidance and support. We currently have a program that we call Dr. Potter's Bigs on Campus program, and we now have 43 kids that we bus every other week from their junior high school in St. Cloud to St. Cloud State. And there they are matched with faculty, staff, and community members. And what that is doing is it is changing these kids' lives, that they are now familiar with a college campus, they're familiar with higher ed, they're familiar with life beyond what they might think it is. We recently had a little tell us that when he first met his big, he said he wanted to grow up to work at a SA station as a cashier because he felt that was what he would be doing. And now after being with his big family for a couple years, he's looking at going to a college of some type. So we know that we can change kids' perception and we can change their lives. We help boost self-esteem, help with social skills, and our bigs provide that extra guidance that kids need. Many of our kids don't get the support that they need at home, and especially with career and college decisions, and we are there to help them, both the staff and the bigs. We have lots of partnerships. We work with our local two-year, four-year colleges. We work with other programs as well as the high schools. We also take our kids on college visits, and we also take them to experience different types of career. For example, we took a busload one day out to a farm. You would think that kids in St. Cloud would all experience a farm, and that just isn't accurate at all. So they were able to see what it was like to bale straw, what it was like to milk cows. And I myself am from a farm, so to think that would be a fun trip isn't how I'd want to spend a day. But for our kids, they loved it. And we just provide a lot of opportunity, and we're constantly thinking, what else can we provide for them, what type of experiences, and hitting their interests in many different levels. And I also have a paper, a flyer, if we could have a page, maybe pass it out. But this did not make the packet, and I apologize for that. But there we have some stats that is just specific to our program. And with that, I am done with my part.
Thank you, Ms. Nathan. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Deanna Threadgill, and I'm here as a big sister with the Twin Cities Agency. Thank you, Chair and the committee, for the chance to talk this morning about my little sister, Kang, and about what Big Brothers Big Sisters has done to support her and her college and career readiness planning. So I was officially matched with Kang in October of 2007. So that was almost 12 years ago, and she was just turning 12 at the time and in seventh grade. And we remained very actively matched. We're still close today. The first 2 years we were in the program, we were matched in the site-based program. She was attending Murray Junior High, and I would go over to the school and have lunch with her one day a week, every week, and we would talk about all sorts of things. As you know, the junior high years are tough, and so it was really a good time to talk through things she was going through with being kids at school and how she was doing with her planning in high school. When Kang was ready to enter high school, we decided to move to the community-based program with Big Brothers Big Sisters, where we get together 2 to 4 times a month out in the community. And to do that, we had a match meeting with our case manager and her parents in her home. And our case manager spoke Hmong, and so she was able to translate between Kang's parents and I. And I still remember sitting in their living room and having that first meeting, and her dad looked at me and he said, "If you're going to spend time with her during high school and take her away from her studies, then you have to promise me you're going to help me get her into college and get her through college." And one of my proudest moments was this December when I sat in the audience at St. Cloud State University and she walked across the stage with her BSW. And it wasn't just that she had achieved this goal, but it was seeing that look of pride on the face of her parents as they watched her to do this and know that she had achieved this very important goal. Big Brothers Big Sisters was really integral in, I think, helping her to get to that stage, and I know she'll tell her own story in just a moment. Throughout our match, we did lots of things together. We did lots of things that were just fun and new opportunities, things that Kang hadn't had a chance to do and things I had never had a chance to do. We got to explore different careers and things that she might be interested in. At one point in time, she thought she might be interested in photography, so we took a free photo class through Big Brothers Big Sisters with a photographer, and she explored that. We went to different career exploration events. We went to one at International Dairy Queen, where she learned about food science and branding and the importance of her online presence, what that meant for her career. We did a lot of college prep. We worked one-on-one with a college access coordinator at Big Brothers Big Sisters to help her apply for a scholarship, which she got to support her through college. I remember as she was getting ready to apply for college, one day she sent me a college application essay, and she didn't say much in the email. She just asked me to review it. And I opened the essay, and I was really surprised by it because there were lots of errors in it. And I know she's a really good writer, and I know we've been working a lot on writing, and I was very surprised. And so I called her, and I asked her if something was going on that we needed to talk about and why there were so many errors in the essay. And she laughed, and she said, "Oh, no, that was from my friend. She doesn't have anyone to help her, and I was hoping that you could look at it." And that was the moment that really struck me, the difference between having someone who can help you with these kind of steps and having a family that's new to the country that doesn't know the steps in the process. And it really hit me the importance of mentoring at that moment and all that we've been able to achieve through Big Brothers Big Sisters. So I'd like to yield it now so Kim can share her story.
Welcome, Ms. Moore. Please state your name and proceed.
Yes. My name is King Zo Moore, and I was a little sister in the Big Brother Big Sister program in Twin Cities. So I want to thank the chair and the committee members for the opportunity to speak today and give my testimony to support Big Brothers Big Sister and this bill to provide support to many more young people as well. So like I stated earlier, my name is King Zo, and I was a little sister in the Big Brothers Big Sister Twin Cities program from the time I was in sixth grade. And we officially graduated from the program when I graduated from high school in 2014. But I've continued to receive support from Deanna, my mentor, and from the organization as well. Since I was young, I knew that I wanted to go to college and then get a career where I could support my family and myself as well. As a child growing up in a family with nine other siblings, I knew that finding resources to support myself and getting higher education was going to be a challenge. I knew that there were some other resources in school that I received, such as AVID, but that I didn't have any other resources at home to get. My parents moved to this country before I was born, and they didn't have a lot of exposure to American college as well, and all the stuff required to achieve my dream. Plus, raising a family with 10 children was going to be tough and challenging. When I heard about the program, I decided to sign up because I wanted to go to college, and I wanted to find a mentor to support my dream. I was matching 7th grade with my mentor, Deanna, and we met for 2 years weekly in middle school. When I moved to Harding High School, we decided to move to the community-based program. And growing up in a traditional Hmong American family, my parents really emphasized that education was very important. And I remember my father making Deanna promise him to help me get into college. During high school, we did lots of things together. We explored the community, searched for careers that I may be interested in, engaged in many conversations about life, career, about my future, and but also built a good relationship along the way. And through these conversations, she helped me understand things I was interested in and connected me to the resources that Big Brother Big Sisters provide. We went to Dairy Queen, where I got to be a taste tester and create my own Dairy Queen flavor, and where I learned about food science and market research. I wanted to be a professional photographer when I was younger, so we took a photo class, and I learned more about that career as well. I went on scholarship with Big Brother, Big Sister, with 10 other students, and we went to Chicago, and we went to Beloit, Wisconsin, where we went to tour other colleges, see new places, and it was also my first trip away from home, so it was kind of tough, but it was also amazing to experience that independence building. And then meeting with Deanna and another member of the Big Brother, Big Sister staff, we filled out a scholarship application and college application, and it was really great because I was able to receive a full scholarship through the NXF Family Foundation. And while being matched with Big Brother, Big Sister in college, they were able to help me change my major, gave me additional support with my degree. And with that, Big Brother, Big Sister gave me a social work placement when I needed practical experience. Like she stated earlier, I graduated from St. Cloud State University with a bachelor in social work and a minor in human relations. And the Big Brother, Big Sister didn't just help me find an amazing mentor, a big sister, and a friend. They helped me stay in track in high school, explore other colleges, find scholarship, and not only that, they stay connected with me throughout my years in college as alumni of the program. And entering the workforce, I decided to give back to the organization that helped shape who I am today. Big Brother, Big Sister didn't just help youth like me overcome our adversity and challenges. They also provided us the right tools to develop and to enhance our skills.
Thank you so much. Ms. Moore, we have got a question from Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thanks for the work you do, everyone involved in the organization, the Big Brothers and Big Sisters. I'm really pleased to hear about the graduation rates taking a boost as a result of your efforts. I do have a question, though, on the last couple lines of the bill, Representative Zhang. It refers to the Twin Cities, Central Minnesota, and Southern Minnesota. And can you tell me what occurs in the rest of the state as far as Big Brothers and Big Sisters?
Representative Zhang.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sundin, I will have Mr. Gore come and testify.
Please go ahead, Mr. Gore.
Mr. Chair, the committee members, there's a three organization statewide. As I stated, there's a greater Twin Cities that I'm responsible for. And you just met Jackie, who is responsible for St. Cloud. Then you have another affiliate in Owatonna. So that represents three organizations throughout the state. There are pockets of the community that doesn't really have Big Brother's footprint, if you will, and one of the things we're working very closely is creating collaboration and partnership with other mentoring organizations, because we've been around and we do evidence-based mentoring and extensively, so we are creating partnerships where there are pockets, but as there are mentoring gaps in our city, in our community, in our state, and we hope to fill that in the future.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, you know, about the tribal entities as well. We have 11 tribes in the state of Minnesota that have the same social problems as the rest of the state, and sometimes even it's accentuated with some of the gang violence and whatnot within those tribes, tribal areas. I'm just wondering, do you reach into the tribes? Do you have cooperation with the 11 tribes?
Mr. Gore.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we do work with communities, indigenous communities in Twin Cities. We have received a number of requests from the tribe community up north. The challenge we saw was in order for us to have a really effective mentoring program, you have to have volunteers. Preferably volunteers from the community. So the challenge there sometimes that we are faced as a mentoring organization is getting enough volunteers to serve our kids and our youth in our community. So we are exploring a variety of different options with some of the tribe community in up north. One example would be we are looking to explore an online technology platform to do a college career readiness, job shadowing, providing sort of mentorship through online technology as opposed to face-to-face, because our work in our community is all about sort of relationship and one-to-one or group mentoring. As I stated earlier, the biggest challenge for us as a mentoring organization that relies on volunteers is getting more volunteers, because there are enough kids, there are always more kids to serve, but our limiting factor is getting volunteers.
Representative Sundin.
That's great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other thing you touched on is some of the career opportunities that you expose young people to. And you touched on the building trades just very gently, but there's a lot of opportunity here. Chair Mahoney and myself have been involved in apprenticeship training, and we'd love to see more people come in and explore the possibilities in the building trade. So we can talk offline if you want some contact information to help you with your program.
Thank you, Representative. I assume that is a comment, so we'll connect you with Mr. Gore. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sundin, does that mean you'll be signing up to be a volunteer?
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if you want me personally mentoring any children.
Perhaps you can use some mentoring.
He's already, Representative Zhang, I think Representative Sundin has already volunteered himself. So go ahead, please, and restate your motion and give us your remarks.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you so much for the opportunity to present House File 954. And also want to thank Mr. Gore and his colleagues for bringing this bill forward. I ask that as we move forward, we consider as a committee that's focused on workforce development, jobs and economic development, that we pay attention to our youth for our future who need programs such as this. And as I testified earlier, I'm a proud product of having mentors in my life to be here today, to be sitting here and talking to all of you. And so thank you so much for the opportunity, Mr. Chair and members. And I ask that House File 954 be laid over for possible inclusion in the House Jobs Omnibus Bill.
Thank you, President Chung. House File 954 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the division bill. We now have House File 1036.
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning, Representative Edelson. Welcome to the Jobs Committee. And I will move your motion for House File 1036 for possible inclusion, for possible inclusion in the division bill.
Thank you, Chair. And Chair, also, I am a freshman. It is my first time to this committee, so I have baked goods. Representative, do you want to pass them around? Yes, sir. They're all for you.
You don't get to keep them all.
Chair and members, I'm honored to present this mental health workforce bill before you today. Washburn Center for Children is a well-renowned clinic in the area of children's mental health, one of the largest providers in Minnesota. I did a year of my clinical work with Washburn 10 years ago, and their innovative evidence-based models have stayed with me. This bill keeps it pretty simple. Many of us have heard we are facing challenges to meet the complex and evolving mental health needs of our kids in Minnesota. 1 in 5 kids are impacted by mental health conditions before the age of 18 across all income levels and ethnicities. There are more than 100,000 Minnesota kids who suffer from untreated anxiety, depression, and trauma. Minnesota faces a mental health workforce shortage that is projected to only grow. We need to ensure more mental health therapists will enter the workforce in the months and the years ahead, especially clinicians with a focus on our kids. This bill aims to meet the growing demands of our state by investing in therapists and diversifying our clinical workforce. Members, let me walk you through the bill. And also, just to note, we have two handouts, one from Alina and one that is from Washburn, I think, that are going around. Part one of this bill is a request for a one-time $1 million appropriation from the general fund from the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development to allow Washburn Center for Children to be able to hire and train 40 clinicians. In this amount, we have accounted for approximate 2 months of start time for a new clinician to get up to speed, as well as the cost of supervision. This adds up to be approximately $25,000 investment for each new clinician. Part two of this bill is a request for a one-time appropriation of $400,000 from the general fund to the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development. This amount would be for grants for the Pathways Program to create paid clinical fellowships for master's and doctorate level professionals of color in the children's mental health treatment area. This bill would allow Washburn Center for Children to take 10 fellows per year over the next 4 years. It is important to have therapists that reflect the diverse communities that we serve in Minnesota. I would now like to call my first testifier, Tom Steinmetz. He's the CEO of Washburn Center for Children.
Welcome, Mr. Steinmetz. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Tom Steinmetz. I'm the CEO at Washburn Center for Children. Washburn Center is one of the only places in Minnesota committed exclusively to children's mental health services and training. It's all we do. We're totally focused on improving affordable access to high-quality mental health services and providing great training for interns and professionals so that more children and families all over Minnesota can get help. What that looks like in practice is each year we provide clinic, school, and home-based therapy services for more than 3,200 children and their 9,000 family members. Advanced internships in social work and psychology for 80 students every year, and training for over 1,000 parents and professionals from all over Minnesota each year. As Representative Adelson highlighted, this initiative provides solutions to grow and increase the cultural diversity of the mental health workforce while also making sure that thousands more children get help. So we know, as Representative Adelson highlighted, there's over 100,000 children in Minnesota today living with untreated mental health issues. Only 35% of the children who need help are currently getting it. The Health Services, the Health Resources Services Administration, HRSA, has designated 9 of the 11 geographic regions in the state as mental health shortage areas. And right now, over half of the practicing psychologists in the state are over the age of 55. There's also a striking lack of cultural diversity in the field. Minnesota Department of Health has found that only 12% of practicing psychologists and 8% of social workers in the field right now are people of color. So as more families seek treatment and we work to expand access to mental health services across the state, we need to increase both the number of mental health professionals in Minnesota and the cultural diversity of the mental health workforce. And this bill does exactly that. So through this workforce investment, we will add 40 additional therapists and hire and train them, 40 master's and doctoral students of color, which is 10 fellows per year over 4 years, will receive the advanced clinical internships that Washburn Center already provides to 80 students per year, a $7,500 fellowship grant, and mentoring from experienced supervisors of color. In its first year, the Pathways program has already seen very strong results. We've seen a 70% increase in the cultural diversity of our interns just in the first year since we launched the program. This workforce expansion and investment will allow thousands more children who are currently suffering with untreated mental health issues to get help. Washburn Center will expand to serve 5,000 children per year by 2020, which means that a total of 20,000 children will get help over the next 5 years. Lastly, I want to emphasize that this is a sustainable one-time request. After the therapists are in place, trained, and providing services, their ongoing costs are fully covered by health plan or medical assistance reimbursement for the therapy services that we provide. And now I have the honor of introducing Chantel Vaughn, who is one of the current Pathways Fellows at Washburn Center for Children. Thank you so much.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome. Please state your name and proceed.
Yes, my name is Chantel Vaughn. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for having me this morning. Please excuse me. I have a cold, so I know I sound horrible. So I just want to let you know that I'm not your typical college student. I'm a working adult who is married with two young children. I've been in the nonprofit world for over 15 years working with children and families, and my entire career has been revolved around helping others. During my career, I've recognized that there are not many people of color represented in the mental health field, and I find it crucial that there are therapists that mirror the communities we serve. I always considered returning to school to obtain a master's degree, but faced several barriers to make it a reality. My barriers included time and support, how can I successfully juggle everything, finances, how can I manage my financial responsibilities when I have to complete an internship. Once I found out about the Pathways program at Washburn Center for Children, I saw it as an opportunity to alleviate the barriers I faced. It was literally the reason I applied to graduate school. Upon acceptance of both the graduate program and Pathways, I felt like I was where I was supposed to be, not to mention an internship at Washburn Center for Children, one of the most recognized leaders in children's mental health. The Pathways program has offered me the support of a cohort and a mentor of color that has been in the field for several years. We have time where we come together and can discuss the specific challenges we face in a field that lacks diversity. In addition, we have a mentor who has the experience to lead us in our journey. Pathways always also provides a generous stipend to offset the financial challenges returning to school brings, The stipend allows me to avoid placing further stress on my family and provides us with the missing income that having an internship creates. Pathways program is an opportunity to address systemic barriers, the lack of cultural diversity in the mental health field, and develop skilled clinicians to support those with mental health needs. Washburn has made it possible for me to pursue my MSW. Without this program, I would still be enmeshed in the barriers that surrounded me. I am immensely thankful that Washburn's leadership saw the gap in diversity and chose to address it. I ask that you approve Washburn's request for funding so they may continue the vital work they have started that will provide opportunities for future clinicians of color. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Are there any questions from the members? Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this, I don't know if this is to the author or to the other testifiers. I applaud this because I think the state is well behind in addressing our mental health issues, both in children and in the state in general. However, what's the demographics for children treated here? Are these largely from the metro area, or is it a statewide program?
Mr. Steinman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. For the direct, I'll answer that in terms of the services we provide and the training we provide. For the direct services that we provide for the 3,200 children each year, those services are provided metro-wide across the Twin Cities. Our hope is to grow and expand that over the next 2 years by starting to provide teletherapy services. On the training side, however, through the training that we're providing both for the 80 interns a year who come from all over the state, but also all of the training that we're doing for professionals, that has a direct impact on the children served all across the state. The best example I can give of that very quickly is I think you're all familiar with the school-linked mental health grants. Washburn is the designated trainer for one of the evidence-based treatment models that the states recognize called Managing and Adapting Practice. We're providing the training in Managing and Adapting Practice for all of the school-linked therapists who are getting trained in that model across the state. So we see that as having a huge impact because we're able to train those therapists who then go back into their own home community, wherever that is in Minnesota, and be able to provide those evidence-based treatment services.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any questions? Representative Hassan.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I just want to say thank you to Heather, who's a fellow mental health clinician, for bringing this bill forward. It's really important that we address issues. We're in a mental health crisis and an opioid crisis, and we don't even have enough providers. And when we talk about communities of color, that's even more scarcity. So this bill addresses that. So I'm happy to support, and thank you for bringing it forward.
Representative Mahoney. Chair Mahoney.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I have a couple of questions about the dollars, and maybe I missed it, but I didn't think so. Your Section 1 appropriates $1 million. So who are you training with that $1 million? And then Section 2 appropriates another $400,000 for people to be trained. So what's the separation? What is the $1 million for? What is the $400,000 for? And I probably have a question from that answer.
Mr. Steinman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. So as you said, it's broken into two pieces. The first piece is the $1 million. What that training and funding is specifically for is the training cost that it takes for us to hire and then train 40 additional therapists. So in the financial analysis that we've done, because all of our reimbursement is fee-for-service reimbursement, when we hire a therapist, we're paying their full salary. We take them through 2 months of training, onboarding, and then ramp-up time while they're building up a caseload of families that they can work with. The cost to sustain and support both the direct training and the supervision associated with that, we've done a very detailed financial analysis. It works out to $25,000 per therapist. So that's where that $1 million comes from, 40 additional therapists at $25,000 per person. The second part of the request is separate, and it's specific to the Pathways Fellowships. So with the Pathways Fellowships, what that funding would allow us to do is to grow and sustain the current Pathways Fellowship program to be able to host 10 fellows per year. And that provides a combination of three things. It's a $7,500 fellowship grant that each of the 10 fellows per year would receive. And then it also provides a bit of additional financial support for the mentoring and supervision that is provided for all of the fellows.
Chair Mahoney.
Thank you.
So what you're doing here is you're expanding your services.
Yes.
How many clinicians do you have on staff at the current time?
We currently have a... Thank you, Mr. Chair. We currently have 140 therapists on staff at Washburn.
Chair Mahoney?
So then you're going to have, you have 140, so you're going to go to 180?
Mr. Steinman?
That's exactly right, Representative.
Chair Mahoney?
Do you have, in your physical plant, do you have space for those 40 clinicians at the current time, or are you looking to put an addition on and look to come back at a later time?
Mr. Steinman?
Mr. Chair, Representative, great question. So Washburn has three clinics in the metro area right now. We just successfully moved into a larger West Metro location in Edina, where we have room to grow there. We also have additional room at our headquarters, which is right in Minneapolis. And then our plan is in late 2020 to open a new East Metro site that will give us room for about 20 of those additional 40 therapists to be housed and to provide broader access to care across the whole Twin Cities metro region.
Chair Mahon.
And then one final question. Of the 400,000, is this a one-time, or are you expecting to come back for 400,000 in 2 years or in 3 years?
Mr. Steinman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, this would be a one-time request that would expand and sustain the Pathways Fellowships across the next 4 years, starting in July of this year.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney. Representative Cosney.
Thank you, Vice Chair. It was mentioned, obviously I think we all agree that mental health issues are something that needs more addressing. And so I appreciate the intent of the bill, and thank you for sharing it with us. You'd mentioned therapists of color. I'm one of the co-sponsors on the Teachers of Color Act and authored it last year. Can you show me or point out what line of the bill addresses that?
Representative, it would be 1.17 level professionals of color in children's mental health.
Representative Cosney?
Line
1.17 level professionals of color in children's mental health.
Great. Okay. Thank you. I missed that, so good. I didn't see that specifically in there. I thought we were just talking about it and didn't have it in there, so I appreciate that being in there.
Representative Cosney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why are we going through this committee instead of Health and Human Services? This is obviously a big health issue, more so than a workforce development issue that you're trying to achieve. Is there money more available, you think, here? Or why didn't you go to the HHS?
Representative Edelson, I think to look into this, it's more about creating jobs versus addressing the health. So I think it's more appropriate for this bill to be in this division rather than the HHS, as I see. Representative Edelson, you wanted to add something?
Obviously, he hasn't seen my budget yet.
I'm sure HHS feels the same. Chair, honestly, I would agree with the chair in terms of looking. I do think this is a workforce bill. It's adding more clinicians, and so it's addressing a workforce need that we have.
Representative Cosney.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and I respectfully might suggest that this might be better please the chair's budget if it was split where the fellowships to create new jobs, the $400,000, be one bill in front of this committee for the workforce development. It seems to me the $1 million would be more of a HHS bill and out of their funds is what I would think would probably be more appropriate. Representative Endels.
Chair, Representative. In terms to the $1 million appropriation, it is a one-time appropriation that does actually help create more clinicians. Without that funding, it's going to be a struggle to be able to help create, I mean, the hours and time spent to actually get them to actually be practicing clinicians. I would stay, you know, hold that it's actually a workforce bill.
Mr. Chair, I think we could make that similar argument across all the bills that we have in transportation that I serve on. We have a lot of bus drivers in the transit area that we don't come to this committee to ask for funding to train the new bus drivers, the new plow drivers, the people that help build the streets. We don't come to this committee for education to help fund our teachers and their mentorship programs. So I think we just have a very different opinion on this, but I appreciate the efforts of the bill.
Thank you so much, Representative Fresnick. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author and testifiers, really do appreciate the bill and the work you do. My question, again, goes back to the tribal contacts. Out of the 11 tribes, how many will this program actually touch and affect on those tribal lands?
Mr. Stein.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm sorry, but I'm not able to answer that accurately. There's not an immediate direct connection with the tribes, and I can't add any more to that answer.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Chair Noor. Monday we spent almost the entire day focusing on tribal concerns, looking for some answers to help them out. You know, a lot of those tribal areas are stricken with poverty and a number of other social downfalls, I guess you would, and obstacles. So I'm hoping you can reach out into the tribes and cooperate with them and get some trained professionals out into those reservation areas. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sandin. Representative.
Thank you, Chair Noor. And my apologies to the testifiers. I was out of the room for a little bit speaking to representatives from the author's school district, as it happened. So I may have missed this. Representative Hassan is absolutely right. We need more clinicians. But my understanding is that there's a significant dearth of candidates to become clinicians. So where are you going to find the folks to do this training program?
Mr. Steinman?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yeah, that's a great question. And what I would focus on with that is that's going to come through the growth of the existing partnerships that we have with the universities who provide master's and doctoral level programs in clinical social work and psychology. So there, what we're seeing, honestly, is not so much of a pipeline issue at the very, very front end. It's more the limited funding and the barriers to provide the kind of support that Chantel talked about all the way through the pathway to licensure in mental health. So the social work and psychology programs receive enough applicants, and we receive far more applications for our internships than we're able to provide. What's really needed is the additional support to provide the financial support to fund those internship placements, the training, and then when therapists are first starting out and getting rolling, once they've built up a caseload and gone through training, those positions then are really sustainable.
Representative.
Thank you, Chair Noor. So you've actually got the supply side is okay. It's the choke points is what I'm hearing you say. Does that supply side of potential therapists include sufficient numbers of candidates of color to meet the part in Section 2?
Mr. Steinman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in terms of our piece of this, I would say on a very, very broad level, there's still a lot of work to do to promote and create options and opportunities for more people of color to come into the mental health field. Specifically for our Pathways Fellowship program, we receive more applicants, far more applicants right now than we're able to provide with fellowships, and that's exactly why we would like some additional financial support to help expand and grow that number of fellowships that we're able to offer. But there's absolutely plenty of applicants in the pipeline right now at that master's and doctoral level.
Representative.
Thanks, Chair Noren. I think I'll get to one last question. But thank you for that, because we want more therapists. We want more therapists of color. We have a hard time in the education area recruiting and retaining, you know, teachers of color. So I'm just looking to see if that's the case in the mental health area. Since you explained that some of this will be paying salaries of these trainees, what assurance do we have that they will remain in Minnesota after Minnesota taxpayers have been paying their salaries for 3 or 4 or 5 years?
Mr. Steinman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have hard data about that, but I can speak anecdotally from my 20 years at Washburn. There's a very, very small percentage of interns and therapists who may come to us from different parts of the country and then move back. The vast, vast majority, I would estimate it at over 90%, at least, of the therapists live in Minnesota. They may come and move to the Twin Cities to complete their master's or doctoral level training and then complete their internship at a place like Washburn, but then they stay in the state. They stay in the state. They may go back to their hometown and practice, but it's very few people who are then, from what we're able to see and track, who are just leaving and moving to different parts of the country.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Noren.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. We will take the last question from Representative Gunter, please. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Frankly, I don't care where the money comes from. I just know the need is tremendous, and I thank you for bringing this bill to us. But the bill came from Ways and Means. Chairman Mahoney, I'm sure you're creative enough to tell them that we spent jobs money that might have been something that Health and Human Services could have paid for. So I really appreciate this bill. Thank you for bringing it to us.
Chair Mahoney.
Thank you, Chair. Could you just have one special group for legislators? Never mind.
Large cause.
Might have to be a large section of the group. Okay. What's the typical wage for a, and I'm going to be specific here, a child, I think this is a mental health clinician focused in children's mental health. Do you have an average income for these folks?
Mr. Steinman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. Yes, we were actually just looking at this very recently. Our average salary for a master's or doctoral level therapist, child therapist at Washburn, is about $57,000.
Chair Mahoney.
I was hoping it was a lot more, because I think it's a very important profession. One of my, and this is actually something, as the chair, I'll try to look as favorably as I can at, because it really is where we're spending a higher dollar figure to train someone for a job that is well above a living wage. The $57,000 living wage in the state is approximately $40,000 to $47,000. We're actually above that by a good amount. We spend an awful lot of money training people to go from $12 an hour to $15 an hour, which really doesn't help in the terms of take someone off of public assistance in terms of housing or food or anything else. We need to train for jobs that pay above that. So I'm happy to hear this and happy to see this. And as a chair, with a budget that keeps getting creeped into from other areas, Timmy will do it. And for those too young to remember, the Mikey will do it. Mikey will do anything. That's a reference set. So thank you for bringing the bill. I do want to see more help for young children. I'm not sure that it will prevent future problems in their adulthood, as I know too many, maybe some too close to home. But you need to start somewhere. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, if you have your final remark.
Thank you, Chair and members. I would just, I grew up in a really impoverished home in a neighborhood that wasn't great. And I remember a therapist, actually, Chair Mahoney, being able to help me and help guide me in a better way. I would say that an investment in our therapist is an investment in our community. I know it's not that the wage may be higher, but that the need is great, and our kids are worth it. So I thank you for your consideration on this bill.
Thank you so much. House File 1036 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the Jobs Division bill. We now have House File 851.
Sorry, Mr. President. I like Big Brothers. I wanted to be one in college. And
welcome, Representative Stevenson. So please proceed and take over from here.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move Bill House File 851 for possible inclusion in the omnibus. And I am very pleased to come before this committee in support of Twin Cities Rise, a phenomenal organization that has been serving the community for many years now, doing great work helping train, providing our community with valuable skills and connecting people with jobs in our community. And I'm going to let Twin Cities Rise do the bulk of the work here, explaining what they do and why they're so good at doing it. But I did want to highlight a couple of things that are particularly meaningful to me and a couple of reasons why I'm particularly pleased to be supporting this bill. Many members will know that my day job is as a prosecutor for Hennepin County. And, we see people on some of their worst days. But it's not the last of their days. You know, once they leave the criminal justice system, they come eventually get back into the community. The overwhelming majority of the people who enter into the criminal justice system go back into the community, sometimes very quickly. And that transition can be really difficult. And one of the big things that we know makes a difference in a successful transition back in the community and making sure that people don't return to a criminal justice system is getting a good job. And that's very difficult for a lot of people who have criminal histories. And it's important that we have organizations like RISE that work with people who have criminal histories to help them get good employment so that they can contribute to society and make that successful transition. And if you take a look at the handout that they provide you, you can see that 51% of the people that they worked with in 2018 had criminal histories, which is just remarkable, and particularly when you know that their graduates' recidivism rate, the rate at which those people, their graduates, commit crimes in the future is just 16%. That compares to 61% national recidivism rate. That is remarkable results that they are achieving, and we should be really happy and proud of the work that they're doing in that respect. The second thing that I really want to highlight that's really unique about RISE is the way that they access their funds from the state. We hear a lot about results in the job and wanting to see results. RISE only gets paid when they achieve results. They operate through a statute that only allows them to receive funding when they are actually placing people in jobs. And so we know that every dollar that we're sending their way is getting a good result because they only get it if they get the result. And I think that that's a level of accountability that is really appealing to me. So it's a great program, and it's my pleasure to turn it over now to Ms. White to talk more about their great work that they're doing.
Welcome, Ms. White. Please state your name and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Leslie Dwight. Excuse me. I'm the Director of Research at Twin Cities Rise. I also have with me today one of the participants in our training program, Jackie Williams, who will speak after I'm done. again, I'd like to thank the chair and committee members for convening us today.
I want to have this microphone. I can move over so you're not.
Thank you. I'm going to start my remarks with an introduction to Twin Cities Rise. Twin Cities Rise transforms lives through personal empowerment, career training, and meaningful employment. Our training programs develop the self-confidence and 21st century skills needed to become financially independent and build a better life for those with multiple challenges to employment. Our secret sauce is our unique curriculum called Personal Empowerment. This is a life-changing class that builds the habits and mindsets that lead to long-term success. And just as an aside, based on this success, we've trained hundreds of nonprofits and educational professionals in the Twin Cities and nationally in this curriculum so that they can use it with their own clients and students. At Twin Cities Rise, our ultimate goal is job retention because we know that being able to keep a job leads to long-term financial stability. To support job retention, Twin City Rise's career coaches work with participants for up to 2 years after job placement, helping them adjust to full-time employment and grow in their careers. So today I'm here to ask for your support on House File 851, and I'm just going to outline five reasons for that support. So the first reason is that Twin Cities Rise serves those with the most barriers. More than 80% of participants are unemployed when they come to us, most chronically unemployed or underemployed, and experience barriers such as criminal backgrounds, chemical dependency, housing instability, and transportation difficulties. We support low-income adults so they can find a way back into the mainstream economy and become contributing members of our community. We have a lot of folks sitting out on the sidelines, and that's what we do, is we bring them in. Reason number two is that Twin Cities Rise graduates achieve long-term financial stability. In 2018, graduate incomes increased from a little over $8,000 annually at program start to more than $28,000 per year. We aren't just finding them any job. We are placing graduates into permanent full-time jobs with benefits and growth opportunities. And they stay in those jobs. Over the past 10 years, Twin Cities Rise has a 78% job retention after 12 months, and that's more than twice the national average for similar programs. Reason number three, Twin Cities Rise supports regional prosperity. As you know, unemployment is low and the workforce is becoming more diverse. Employers are clamoring for employees like Twin Cities Rise graduates who can help them be successful. I believe in your materials that you have a letter from QIC, or Quality Ingredients Corporation. Over the past 12 months, QIC has hired 12 Twin Cities Rise graduates onto their shop floor. They're a food manufacturer. They make food powders. And they hired them because they're good employees and because they add value to their bottom line. Reason number four, Minnesota taxpayers benefit too. For every dollar invested by the state of Minnesota in Twin Cities Rise over the past 20 years, taxpayers have gained $7 in return. The benefit comes through increased taxes paid by Twin Cities Rise graduates, decreased criminal justice costs, and decreased government subsidies. In 2018 alone, Twin Cities Rise graduates increased their annual incomes by more than $3.5 million. And the fifth reason to support the bill, as Representative Stephenson said, is that the state pays only for results. So this is a unique bill. House File 851 requests $800,000 each year through an existing pay-for-performance statute that was created over 20 years ago. This statute supports qualified job training programs through performance-based funding. The pay-for-performance formula holds Twin Cities Rise accountable. We invest in training up front and are only paid by the state when we achieve those life-changing outcomes. And that includes placement into a good job with health benefits and 12 months job retention. So let me conclude by saying that Minnesota was the first in the nation to pass pay-for-performance legislation of this kind. With your support, we will continue this partnership, helping those with the most barriers develop competitive job skills that lead to good jobs and long-term financial independence. Now it's my pleasure to yield to Jackie Williams, who is a current Twin Cities Rise participant, and he joins me today to speak about his experience in the program.
Welcome, Mr. Williams. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jackie Williams. I'm currently a student at Twin City Rise. I've been there. I enrolled in the program in November. I initially came in just to find a job. But after going through the program for a couple of weeks, I realized that Twin City Rise was doing a little bit more than that, than just to get a resume and get hired on a job. For me, the difference was the empowerment part of the program. At 62, a recovering addict with a criminal background, I thought my job opportunities were limited. But through the program and through the coaching staff and a job coach, and I realized that there are some opportunities out there for me. There are some obstacles that I'll have to overcome, but my job coach and the people at Twin City Rise, they walk me through those obstacles to help me overcome them. I have my biggest obstacle was I was putting in applications and submitting the resumes, but I wasn't getting any callbacks. And they helped me realize that my resume wasn't up to par. They took me through that process, and I'm upgrading my computer skills, which they call 21st century skills at Twin City Rise. They had a program called Speech Masters. Well, I was just get up in front of a group of people and just talk, enabling me to go through the interviews and be more comfortable in the interview process of the job seeking process. I began to understand that even at 62, if I'm putting in the footwork, if I'm doing what I need to do, then the opportunities will come, will arise for me. I have had a couple of interviews. Background got in the way of one. I thought I had that job. But anyway, background got in the way of that, which is okay. I was able to overcome that setback and continue looking forward instead of looking behind. I've also had a couple of setbacks where companies say, well, we'll stop the interview process right now. That's okay, because they've given me the willingness to keep looking forward instead of looking back. I also have an interview coming up next Wednesday, and through the process of learning how to submit an effective resume, being able to be effective in an interview, and just being steadfast on the process and trusting the process, that the opportunities are there for me. So another thing I noticed about Twin City Rise was the diversity in the classroom when I got there. There were people from all backgrounds, race, creeds, and colors in the classroom. And what I like about that is that as we go through the process together, we became a community, actually. So, therefore, we made contacts that we'll have for life. That I'll know those guys and ladies for life. And during that process, we will be able to become effective members of the community together and maybe help others in the community. I also volunteer at North Point now, something I've never did before, volunteer work. So that's something different. That being a student at Twin City Rise, for me, has helped me to become a more diverse person. I'm willing to do things that I haven't done before in my life. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, for hearing me.
Thank you, Mr. Williams, and I'm with you, so I'll make sure that if there's anything that we can do to help you, you're going for a job interview and making sure that we can help you, land the job. So thank you so much for sharing your story. Representative Wilson, please reinstate your motion.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to renew my motion to have the bill laid over for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Reverend Stevenson. House File 851 is laid over for possible inclusion in the division bill. Thank you. We're now proceeding to House File 1155. Welcome, Mr. Chen. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to present the chair's bill. House File 1155 is a bill that appropriates significant dollars to a place called Ujamba Place, which works with some of the hardest of the hard to place. I have a lot more to say about Ujamba Place. It's been something I've championed for a long time, but knowing Otis here, I need to give him time because he will not stay within the time limit. So with that being said, I'll let Ujamba Place explain what they do.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Otis Zanders. I serve as the chief executive officer for Ujamba Place. I have been joined today, hopefully, if time permit, testimony or statements from our chief operating officer, Ms. Lee Buckley. Also, one of our coaches, who is our education manager, Corey Stewart, is here. And we have a Ujamba man that's here that would love to talk to you. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm hoping that I can get an excuse note from you because Jonito is worried about getting to his class by 10 o'clock. And so I figured if you can give him a note, he'll appreciate that, sir. But I also want to bring
you. The chair is sitting right next to you, so he'll give you the excuse later.
Good enough.
Proceed, Mr. Zander.
I also bring you greetings from another gentleman man that's not here right now, and also for the incredible staff that do this work on a daily basis and other supporters that we have. We will do our best to be conscious of the time because we would love to hear from the other staff as well as to have questions from you. But I'd be remiss if I didn't start this conversation off by thanking the Job and Economic Development Committee for the 2016 award. That would show your investment of this committee in developing an emerging workforce, your investment of dealing with a population that's trying to overcome poverty, to disrupt that cycle, to invest in an organization that quickly became a diversion program for the city of St. Paul. We became a day reporting center for Ramsey County probation officers. An organization with your investment as they expand its reach beyond East Metro because of the service there. So we want to thank you for that tremendous award that coming forth from in 2016. I humbly, on behalf of you gentlemen, come to you today. We are asking you to present a case to continue the funding for our organization's mission to serve the most marginalized population in our society. Ujamaa itself, in Swahili's extended family, is a holistic model that designed to encompass all of the elements that we feel that designed to disrupt poverty. Under the leadership of former Chair Mr. Garofalo and Representative Moran and Mr. Mahoney and other members of the committee, that investment toward this has been something that we have not taken lightly. We understand the investment and knowing that of this population, that it's important to be credible and to go to all extremes to put it all together here. The young men we serve by profile are African-American males between ages of 18 and 30 who have lived in a systemic poverty and chronic unemployment and homelessness. Some have had a lot of contact with the criminal justice system. So in our job, what we've tried to do is create an atmosphere of second chance, an atmosphere of dealing with people that have a history of trauma that's been trying to navigate the interesting intersection of of racism as and poverty, and that's a resource that we have in trying to create this workforce for the employment opportunity. And we come to you at this point saying that your investment is in dividends. We have shown in every bucket that we provide that's been systemic growth, measurable growth in areas that we have invested in. We're here asking to, for an increase to make sure that we can continue to work with employers. We understand the concern that the employment community has about people that may come to me with resume gaps, that come in with the overcome, people that have criminal histories, that have had issues that are coming from single-family household without the guidance and skills to navigate life. And we understand that, and we feel that the effort we're doing is knocking down those barriers. We are preventing this workforce as a workforce that's ready to work, prepared to work, to fill the gap for the market in the state here. I will hold my comments to that level at this time so we can make sure that you hear from my other invited staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zandis. Please go ahead and state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lee Buckley. I'm the COO at Ujamaa Place. And I just wanted to emphasize this morning that we have been very successful with your existing investment at getting jobs for our men. Our men are working because of the job force right now. However, their average salary is at about $11.50 an hour. And that is unacceptable. And so while we provide technical training in the construction industry and in the automotive industry, those are beginning trades, and those men are doing very well. We also are focused on increasing their education and their technical experiences so that they can make the living wage jobs. Our men have, a large number of our men have had poor experience with the educational or academic environment, their trauma, past trauma, and coming out of foster care and having experience in the criminal justice system as a youth has prevented them from even being excited about education that will propel them to better job opportunities. And so we're excited about an opportunity to expand in those areas, expand our partnerships with the private industry as well, so that our men can work through the corporate ladder, if you will, or our job opportunities in the private industry. We have a lot of the partnerships that are in place, but certainly need to increase our outreach. Most of the men come to us through word of mouth, through experience in the community. About 20% of those men now are coming from outside of St. Paul, which is, has been our historical service area. A large number of those are in Minneapolis, but we serve the seven-county metro area. And so we need to expand our resources in the metro area. And when we talk about that, we're talking about, yes, the employment pieces, but we're also talking about transportation. As you can see, over 90% of our men come to us homeless. So we're talking about all of the support services that support their stability and employment as well. So our mantra, if you will, moving forward, you know, is lifelong learning, and so that our men can remain up to speed on the latest technologies, the latest job skills that are necessary for them to take care of their families, because a large number of our men are fathers and connected to the community. So with that, I'd like to yield to Corey Stewart, who is our education manager, who has the responsibility of expanding our educational program to support the career development of our men.
Welcome, Mr. Stewart, and please state your name and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the other members of the committee. My name is Corey Stewart. I am the education manager at Ujamaa Place. As stated, I am tasked with the responsibility of getting our men excited about education again, helping them to navigate some of the traditional barriers that they may have had in the traditional educational system, but are now ready to navigate as men at Ujamaa Place to receive that GED. What we are noticing right now at this juncture is that in order for our men to really be able to take full advantage of our educational opportunities, that there are there's a tremendous need for them to be able to make money and to impact the lives of their family members as well. And so we see that these two things are joint. They go hand in hand, education and employment. And so that's why we stand before you today seeking those necessary resources to improve the educational training for our men. We also recognize the importance in training and preparing the workforce for these men, training them to have the eyes, the ears, and the heart to see beyond just what the resumes say. And so in our attempts in building work history for our men, and building their educational acumen to be able to step in and take full advantage of these jobs, we need full resources and ammunition to be able to attack this issue full force. So again, thank you for the opportunity to stand here today and represent our staff and represent our men in the work that we do at Ujamaa Place.
Thank you. Welcome, and please state your name and proceed.
My name is Janito Doe, and I'm a Ujamaa participant. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My experience in Ujamaa, I came to Ujamaa 2017, February, and there's been good things happening there for, and I'm still part of it, so there's been good things. I know that Ujamaa has a lot of resources, but the best things that I notice about Ujamaa is that everybody is like a family and you can feel the love there. I have been through the computer training program, which is through Microsoft Imagine Academy. I completed that. There's a lot of resources. We did film class. We did outdoors. We challenged ourselves to rock climbing, field trips, all kind of canoeing, just to get to know nature and to challenge ourselves. So basically, it's a very beneficial program, and I'm proud to be a part of Ujamaa. There's a lot of things I can say about Ujamaa, but it's like a second home. It's like a family, and I believe that supporting this, it will be a benefit to the community, the metro area community, because when men come to Ujamaa, they start that transformation and they evolve, you know, to be a better person for the community, for their families, and for everyone, friends, and even strangers in our community. So that's all I have to say. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Representative Dubnyk has got a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to whichever of the testifiers is best qualified. I'm intrigued by the participants' learning advocacy skills. I don't see that as a traditional part of many of the programs that we fund through here. So I'm interested in the advocacy skills and the experience of self-advocacy, given the areas they were working in. Can you talk about how that fits into your, I think you call it, theory of transformation?
Most certainly.
Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your question. The moment that we meet a young man that comes through our doors, he is assigned a coach. And once he's assigned that coach, the coach takes that participant through an individual transformation plan. We recognize that every man's plan for success will not be the same exact ingredients, and so we try to develop unique goals for each young man. And so he develops those goals, he lays those out, and whether they are academic, whether they are employment related, or whether they are surrounded around his housing, he's able to make those particular goals, and then we assist him in that, right? And so over the course of building a relationship, we try to help them in developing a vocabulary to speak for themselves and advocate for themselves. We always say that we will never make a phone call for a man that he can make for himself, right? And so we really see ourselves as being liaisons and being able to connect these men. We understand that at one point in time they will have to step out of our doors and go out and be able to stand up as men for themselves. And so that advocacy is a huge part of the work that we do. Janito here today being able to speak on behalf of the organization, right, is just being testament to that. But it's also a testament to the work with our partners as well. We cannot do this work alone until many of our other partners are able to catch our men where they are and provide them with those other resources as well.
Representative Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Powerful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to be transparent, you guys, because I am a huge supporter of the work that UJAMA does. And as I sit here listening to the presentation, I just smile from ear to ear because we know the stats in the black community around households, that many of the households are raised by women in the household. We know that within the black community, we have huge disparities within jobs, housing, health, but what they bring to the table, and I smile because what I see is that we have men supporting men, right? Sometimes, which is a missing piece for a lot of our young boys, is how to grow up and to be men and be fathers, right? How to engage in the workforce. And for those reasons, we have seen so many barriers that have stopped this from happening. So with the work of UJAMA, you know, I think one of your biggest quotes you just said, we'll never make a phone call for a man who can make a phone call for himself. And that is powerful because often we have organizations that are doing the work for them. They can do this work if we give them the tools to do the work. And so what I've seen from UJAMA is that every dollar that we invest in them, we have getting a return in our state for those dollars. And so, again, I'm just excited to see the work of UJAMA. I'm glad to see you back here again. Just really helping us to expand beyond how we see funding, because funding just doesn't come through one entity, or the support is a wraparound comprehensive approach, which is the work that you do. But at the end of the day, we want strong men to be strong fathers who are taking care of their fathers, who are working to do that every single day, and who can be a part of the workforce, not just today, but into the future. And so I just say thank you for the work that you do.
Representative Cousin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Moran, your comments are a good prelude to kind of the comments that I wanted to make. Talked a little bit about family in your handout here and child support. I think the workforce training part is evident, and I appreciate that. Is there a component to your programming that reconnects or more strongly connects your clients or the men in your program with their families? And Representative Moran's point to be stronger fathers and to learn more of that, so that hopefully eventually we can minimize the cycle of this and have stronger families, that I think would ultimately help the situation.
Ms. Beckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for your question, Representative. Yes, connections with the family is one of the tenets of our theory of transformation, one of the designed outcomes. And we certainly support not only our men, but the social support that comes around the men, which often includes the significant other and the children. We provide opportunities for the men to participate in what's known as Club Dad. We are also hosting the Ramsey County Birth Equity Group at UJAMA Place. And so our men have an opportunity to really experience growth and really exposure to what it means to be a father, something that's often missing from their life experience.
Mr. Chair. Mahoney, I think you have the last words before we adjourn.
It's a great chair's bill. Please vote for it. No, I would like to move House File 1155 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
House File 1155 will be moved for possible inclusion to the jobs omnibus bill. With no further agenda items before us, I would like to call this meeting adjourned.